crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama.
Sam and little towns all around this land.
We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. And you got access to three separate chat rooms all in one go. Pretty cool, man. Pretty nifty. Anyway, you've been hearing me talk a whole lot about static electricity and been posting a lot of links on videos having to do with static electric motors and such. And basically the reason why I've been so adamant about static energy is because of the availability of it. It's the simpleness of actually being able to generate a static charge. Now, I've got an old Maxwell capacitor in my temporary lab, so to speak, my room. This Maxwell capacitor is probably about 6 inches tall, 4 inches wide, or about 2 inches wide, 4 inches long, whatever. And basically running that thing for about 15 or 20 minutes trying to get a static electric motor on there. Every time I...
So are you saying it's good to the last drop?
Like it's not coffee, man. But yeah, it'll energize you. Either way, this particular...
So it's good to the last volt.
Yeah. This capacitor... It's probably one of the most dangerous capacitors that I own. And I have to discharge it every time I get done using it. Otherwise, somebody might come along and accidentally pick it up. The terminals are on the side of it. And this thing could actually be lethal. When I was running a static video, I was trying to put together a static video for another one of my physics toy videos, which I'll probably try to get that done. Probably right shortly, either today, tomorrow, or after the holidays here. But I had run that thing for about a half an hour, trying to basically run a Franklin Bell and trying to run a static electric motor. Well, then it was about the time to give up and everything, because I wasn't getting things working exactly the way I wanted. The Franklin Bell worked fine, and the static motor basically was trying to move, but it just wouldn't. And I spent hours and hours messing with the doggone thing prior. But I had run it with the capacitor for probably about a half an hour. So I'm about to give up. I take this heavy-duty gauge wire and I reach over and I discharge that capacitor. And an arc probably about three inches long come off of there. And it sounded like a shotgun blast going off. It stored a whole lot of power in that capacitor. I'm talking about a literal lethal dose of energy stored in that capacitor just by running this Franklin Bell and the static electric motor. And so that tells me that static electricity could be stored in such quantities that it would be mind-blowing as far as how much energy you could actually store up. Now, one of the tricks that I'm figuring out here that how you're going to actually have to be able to take that energy off of that capacitor is to build some sort of relay switch on a timer that will discharge that past capacitor into a battery bank or whatever load you want to run, probably like every about minute and a half to 2 minutes, so that you're not building this power up to extremes. Now, I'm running more tests on the thing to see if I can actually leave a load on it at all times and still get the capacitor to charge up. But so far, I haven't been very successful in that, because the actual capacitor is being charged up with spark gaps coming off of the static electric motor. And so it's coming off the ground, off the Van de Graaff generator, and it's coming off the positive side from the energy flowing in the other direction, and it doesn't take long at all to charge that capacitor up to deadly ranges. There's a lot of power in that capacitor. And so, with that said, My main focus on searching for alternative energy has been plasma, because high voltage is really easy to generate, and static electricity, obviously, is really easy to generate. And so my hopes is that, looking around at a lot of these different videos, I posted some video links over here in the chat room of different static motors, and one of the ones Stephen Gibbons kind of beat me to the punch there. He posted one in where they actually had a container of water as the rotor. Now that one's really fascinating, because if you can actually get water to spin and centrifugal force takes over, you can actually use that water as hydraulic pressure, or even the centrifugal force, like a flywheel type of scenario, and actually get some serious torque out of this thing. Now, the other video that I posted was from Lidmotor, and Lidmotor did a torque test on one of his videos, and he had a spool with a string and a couple paper clips hanging off of there, and was able to wind that string up with paper clips running that static motor, and he didn't have to reach over there and start the thing, you know, start to spin it. It was a self-starting static motor. So I've seen a lot of different designs on the static motors that basically are getting better and better by the day. Now, a static electric motor, you know, if you could get, this design down to the point where you actually had some serious torque to it by modifying it and learning from every bit of what all these people showed out there, I honestly believe that it is possible to build a static electric motor that would rival the internal combustion engine as far as torque and power wise. And it would be really super simple to keep energized. One of the things that I've learned about static electricity is that crawls everywhere. I've got a Van de Graaff generator sitting on the floor, and I've got the wire running off the top load to my Franklin bell that's basically spent, has the pendulum with a ball, aluminum ball, going back and forth touching from positive to negative, and basically that running into a dual rotor system for a static electric motor that I'm trying to get to run. But the entire table that it's sitting on, and any metal object in the general vicinity, and then some, is building up a static charge. So if you reach across the floor to pick up a wrench, you're liable to get a shock. It's static energy just seems to crawl everywhere. If it runs out of area, it'll find more area. And so I'm thinking to myself, what if you could actually take this this amount of energy and focus it, guide that energy to where you want it to go as opposed to where it wants to go. You guys follow me so far, what I'm talking about?
Well, I'm with you.
If this could be done, you could build up enough pressure to produce the torque that you wanted. And I've seen a lot of these different static electric motors that people are building. The ones with the combs on there for the rotor, it's got combs on both sides, and they're offset with each other, but there's a whole bunch of them. These seem to be able to focus that energy in and produce a lot of torque. That one that I posted last week in the deal, that thing had some serious RPMs going on it. And if you start getting up in RPMs, you start getting up into centrifugal force, and then you end up getting into actually some serious torque. Once you get something up to spinning and you start exceeding certain RPMs, then basically that's how an engine and a torque converter in an automatic transmission works. You know, that engine by itself doesn't have enough power to literally pull the weight of that vehicle without that time to build up that centrifugal force inside those clutches in order to be able to turn the drivetrain like it does. And so that same process could actually be replicated with a static electric motor. You understand what I'm trying to say here, guys? So if you can, that one rotor the one video that Stephen Gibbons posted in there, like I said, that one there starts to spin that water up. It's sitting on a plate with a bearing that has quite a bit of water inside that container. That's a lot of mass to be moving, and if you're moving this with static electricity, then that's pretty doggone impressive. There was a I gotta find it, but there was a comment over there where somebody was giving Lidmotor a rash about getting work done. And as far as I'm concerned, if you got a blade on the end of that thing, and it's spinning a fan blade or whatever that's pushing air around and keeping you cool or something like that, that's work in my book. Now, other people don't classify it as that, you know, that much of work, but
they don't subscribe to your version of reality?
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, if you can get light out of it, if you can get heat out of it, if you can get cool air out of it, then you're getting work done with static electricity. And the one that Remstar.org did, now, he shows it's got a lot of torque on that. It's a really good design. There's so many different designs of 3D printed static electric motors. It's mind-blowing. And they just keep getting better. So, with that said, if that one particular video that I posted here last time around with that static electric motor, that's probably the best one I've seen so far. I don't remember if he put an RPM gauge on that thing or not, an RPM meter to see exactly how fast that gunk was going, but you could literally hear that puppy humming. And it was building, it just continued to build speed. And that was using static electricity. You know, Van de Graaff generators will produce a massive amount of voltage, which in turn will charge up some capacitors that will in turn kill you if you're not careful. That's a lot of power. A lightning bolt from the sky, that's a lot of power. And basically what I'm saying is you literally would have the capabilities of harnessing the power of lightning on real time.
You know, well, that whole thing I've been saying over and over again. I mean, you're talking about taking the lightning bolts and so forth, and I don't really think that that's what you're saying, but you're saying that a lightning bolt is the discharge of a capacitor.
Yeah, it has so much pressure built up inside there, that's why it does so much damage.
So, the thing is, what I've said over and over again, is don't try to catch the lightning bolt. Drain the cloud of its charge. Drain it into a capacitor and then turn it into usable electricity. However, it could, when the grid is down and low, and it's not drawing that much power, then you're going to have to dump that load. Why not dump that load into rods over a cornfield, have the discharge as a lightning bolt over the cornfield, and the lightning makes nitrogen and feeds the cornfield. Duh.
Well, there's plenty of different avenues that this actually could take after you got it all worked out. I mean, this is why I want to put together a situation. I'm going to try to find me a box van, and I'm actually going to try to find an artist that can actually put basically a rolling billboard together to get people excited about mad science. And there's a lot of different little models out there, teaching models, everything from Van de Graaff generators to electrostatic motors to Stirling motors and so on. There's tons of different alternative energy, you know. One of the videos that I'm looking at out here on there is it's a friction electrostatic generator made out of a doggone soda bottle. You know, basically rubbing this soda bottle up against a piece of rubber hose like you'd use on like either a slingshot or for surgical stuff. And it's generated a pretty good substantial voltage. And also there's one out there that Thomas Kim, I think, made that basically has soda cans as the rotor. And that thing's pretty doggone impressive, because if one soda can by itself, that ain't that big of a deal. But he's got probably about 8 to 10 soda cans on there. So now you're actually talking about moving mass. It's a weight going on there. So from where I can see, he's actually getting some serious work done with this thing, and it's spinning up to some pretty good RPM. So you know that it's fully possible to literally build a static motor that has some doggone torque to it. And if you could store this energy in capacitor banks, you could actually use surges of that power from those capacitor banks when the capacitor got fully charged up and had a way to trip that charge into a coil of wire. You could get enough energy out of that coil, out of that capacitor, to turn that solenoid motor, even just for a brief instance, to where it pushes the rod, the first rod down. And I'm looking at one right now on a picture of them on the internet. It's a V8 solenoid motor. And so if you could build up a charge, and let's say you had 8 capacitors, you'd build up the charge, and then they would all fire in sequence just like the timing on your car. When that capacitor got fully charged up, it would push that solenoid down. You would actually turn that static electricity into mechanical energy now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not beyond the realms of possibility, and I'd really like to see this done. But anyway, back to the rolling billboard / rolling mad science lab. I go to a deal every year at the church. It's called A Day in the Country, and they do all types of alternative living and hydroponics and aquaponics and different crafts, and I do the mad science section of it. And so every year I empty out part of my lab and I take it up there and I show them what I'm working on and that kind of stuff there. But this time around, I think I want to get a little bit better at it. I want to actually get a bunch of these little models of Van de Graaff generators, Wimshurst, and static electric motors, and basically magnetic levitated combination for solar and magnetic levitation, and all these little teaching models, and I want to try to really inspire some of the youth and some of the older folks out there that's in their own mad science labs to actually come together and start putting these pieces of the puzzle into something really impressive. And I think this could be done. I could actually put a mobile internet service on top of that band where we could actually broadcast live from events like this that we could find in each one of our communities, and then go to these events every year and basically make a tour of with mad science and getting other people involved. Because when you get out here on the internet and you look at all these alternative energy designs, and you think you found the best one, and you get all these different ideas from it, and then somebody comes out of the woodwork and shows you, well, yeah, that's pretty cool, but did you see this? So there's a whole lot of people out there doing research in alternative energy. There's a whole lot of different designs, a whole lot of different ideas. And those are the people we need to find. Those are the people we need to seek out in order to get, you know, not only the craftsmanship, but the mathematics and the you know, artistic ways that these folks put this stuff together, and even the recycled, the repurposed portion of the deal. You can't ever underestimate repurposing stuff. There's a lot of different how-tos on how to build a homemade generator using already existing electric motors, AC motors, and even direct drive or doggone permanent magnet electric motors. So with that said, there's a lot of people out there interested in alternative energy. And I'd like to try to put this deal together to try to speed up the process of the actual alternative energy community and try to bring more people to the table. Guys, what do you think of that?
I love it.
Well, most of the time people aren't physicists and they aren't electronic engineers, but if you got a simple concept, a design model right there in front of them where they can actually see how that thing functions, you can open lines of discussion with them on how this thing actually doing what it's doing. And that, to me, is sparking off some free thinking that you can actually get people to, you know, bring out their ideas. There's tons of people out there who have tons of ideas, but most of the time they don't talk to nobody about them because they might feel like their idea is stupid. You know, well, if it could be done, then it'd already be done. That kind of craziness.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I want I want to make them folks feel comfortable to talk about ideas, even if it doesn't sound like it's a good idea. You know, I've seen a lot of the best videos that I've seen out there were fail videos.
You know, the thing is some people have an idea, and maybe it is a little bit silly, but if they express their idea, somebody can see the flaw and correct that flaw, and then it becomes a good idea. But yet, the person that could correct that flaw didn't have the original idea. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I don't care who you are out there. If you've got an idea, talk about it. It may sound stupid. It may sound silly. But it might jog somebody else's thinking. And get them to think about it and say, whoa, wait a minute, that might work if we do this or that. So, I mean, nobody out there has a silly idea.
Well, The static motors, when you look at them, have really advanced everywhere from just something as simple as a little cup with a couple pieces of aluminum foil on the side of it sitting on top of a pin to actually ones now with ceramic bearings and stuff. This electrostatic motor that's Daniel Gendron on YouTube has an electrostatic motor. That's the one I think I posted that has serious RPMs going on. And it's precision made. It's a beautiful piece of equipment. And I'm not exactly sure what language he's talking in, but I can just look at this thing and understand how it's functioning.
Yeah, think about this a minute. Of all the buildings throughout the United States and the world that have lightning rods on them that have a ground hooked to it, how about all the metal towers for the supporting grid? Every one of them is grounded. Why? Because they produce static electricity and they're putting it into the ground. If you took all of those grounds and run them to a capacitor, how much electricity could you actually capture without going to lightning bolts? Think about this.
Well, yeah, the atmospheric group is pulling a couple thousand volts out of the air. Now, keep in mind, they got like, I used to say two poles, but I actually rewatched the video. There's four poles. It has a big square wire going. It's got a wire that goes around all four poles in a square. But they're pulling 2,000 volts down out of the air. That don't sound like a lot, but the voltage is pressure, and then they pressurize these doggone capacitors, and at the other end, they're getting some lethal 9,000 volts at the other end of that thing. They got a big long chicken stick that they discharge stuff with, which you right. wouldn't want to touch that because it'd kill you. That's a lot of power.
My thing is, what if we captured all of the static electric charges from all the grounding rods and saved it and started putting it back into the grid?
Well,
you're talking, I'm guessing, okay, but I'm thinking 25% of the use of the electricity in this country, that would replace it. You see what I'm saying?
Well, the infrastructure is already in place. All you'd have to do is modify them ground wires a little bit.
Exactly. It's already there. You just build a little bitty thing you can hold in your hand and put it in between the ground wire and the ground.
If you could figure out a way to literally build... You know, like when those cables coming down, they have a lot of tension on them, all right? They're holding them against the wind and the weight of the tower. And so if you could figure out a way to build an insulated but super strong, where it's non-conductive, like if you had a material that was super non-conductive, all right? And you could build a literal spark gap that could hold both ends of that cable and still keep the same amount of tension as the steel would, you'd have a perfect setup for exactly what we're talking about. One's connected to the ground and the other's connected to the air. See, when those wires are coming from that tower coming down, there's multiple points of ground that's actually grounding that to the earth.
Right.
So if you could build an insulator that would separate the tower itself from the cable that's actually holding it in place, then right. you could build a spark gap that when that energy built up, it'd shoot across that spark gap, and then you'd be able to capture that energy. So with all the exotic materials we got out there, I'm sure that there's got to be something that you could make that would be as strong as steel, but not conductive of electricity.
Here, let's go back to what I said earlier. A whole lot of the static motors I have seen actually run do not produce a spark. The charge is actually going through the air without an actual spark.
Well, that's...
So, there has to be a spark gap. Let's just put it directly into a capacitor and then bleed it off into another capacitor that's even bigger, like you said earlier this year on the show. Don't make it spark. Just put it into a capacitor. When that capacitor builds to its maximum, it discharges into a bigger capacitor, but now all of a sudden now you got 10 little ones going into a bigger one. But when that one, bigger one, is charged, it goes into an even bigger one. And now, that big one, you've got 10 of those going into a bigger one. I mean, what I'm trying to say is, like you said, the infrastructure is already there. We don't even have to modify anything. Just build the apparatus that goes between the wire that goes up into the air and the wire that goes to the ground, and put that in there, capture that electricity.
Yep.
It's all there. It's there.
It's like Vandegraaff,
you pull a gasoline and it runs good and you got the keys. All you have to do is get in the daggone car, put the key in the ignition and turn it, and you're on your way.
All the static motors that you see out there, what you was talking about by not having actual spark, you can feel the static buildup around there, and until that static buildup gets to so high that it actually wants to leap across to whatever ground it can find, because it's going to look for the shortest path to ground to balance itself out. But in the meantime, you could still feel an ion wind, you could still feel pressure going on around the top load of that doggone Van de Graaff generator. If you let that thing run for a long time, I found this out the hard way. That,
you know, if it builds up too high, it's going to jump.
Yeah, well, that's what I was getting ready to say. I found out this the hard way that I was 2 feet away from this thing. It leaped across the top from the top load to my leg as I walked by.
It's possible to drain that charge off before it actually sparks.
Sure it is. That's what I was talking about. But
it doesn't need to be a spark. And why try to capture a lightning? Just discharge the cloud before it creates a lightning bolt. Duh! You have far more control over discharging the cloud than you do trying to catch the lightning bolt.
I wish there was a way to actually physically see static electricity, you know, in the sense of, like when it's starting to build up before you actually see that visible discharge across there. It's pressurizing that top load, and there gets too many electrons on top of that top load that it can't hold no more. So it starts to ionize the air around it, and then discharges and makes a leap to ground. And like I said, I was 2 feet away from that thing, and that thing jumped across there and hit me in the leg.
But you could feel it before it jumped too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. If we could do something somehow to actually register the charge of the cloud before it reaches the point of actually creating a lightning bolt, then you discharge the cloud.
I'd like to find a little tabletop mini USB Van de Graaff generator that would run off of like 5 volts or something like that, and put that Van de Graaff generator inside a closed chamber to where every bit of static discharge that was coming off of there would be sealed in the chamber. I was thinking about doing it the other day, but I forgot while I was out. I was going to try to find about a half inch thick rubber mat to put over my table so that I could insulate all this stuff from that table so that it'd keep all that energy on top of the table instead of traveling down the leg and over to everything else that's metal in the whole deal.
You know, it just dawned on me that what I'm trying to say is what you said at least 4 or 5 times on this show this year, and that is a wire, a copper wire, is nothing more than a railroad track for a train.
Yeah.
It guides the train where it's going to go, and a copper wire guides the electricity to where you want it to go. However, a lightning bolt goes where it wants to go, and you don't know where it's going to hit. So let's build a tower or some, whatever it takes to go up in the air, and as the cloud starts to build a charge before it charges up to create lightning, it actually, all of the charge discharges through the wire before the bolt or to a capacitor. Duh, that's what I've been trying to say.
Well, and, who was it that said that...
Part being a railroad track for to guide the train is exactly what I'm talking about.
Was it you that said the lightning rods aren't there to catch lightning, but they're there to clean the air up before the lightning actually happens?
Yes, exactly. I did say that. And I was the first one that I remember of saying anything about that on the show.
Yeah, well, I never thought about it until that point when you did say that. Now,
right.
That it's actually there. It's actually draining off the energy from the atmosphere before it ever even gets to the point where it can, start to drag lightning down.
Exactly. Now we do exactly what you said and what I said earlier today. We take that drainage of the charge and put it into a capacitor. It's just that simple.
Yep.
It's so simple. That's why nobody believes it or wants to believe it or has even thought about it. You save it. I mean, and what you said, infrastructure, it's already here. Every middle tower carrying radio waves or whatever, microwave antenna towers, towers holding up wire for the grid, you name it. Everything, they ground it. Why? They don't want people to get hurt. We'll put something in between the wire and the ground. Hey,
and you could also
so simple that, I mean, honest to God, I swear a smart dog could understand it.
You could also take that static energy and actually transfer it into wireless energy by using that spark gap to pulse the coil system that would send basically a radio signal out.
Exactly.
And that radio signal could be captured on the other side and then transferred back into energy. So you could take static electricity from one side of town and ship it via a radio wave on the other side of town and pick that radio wave up and get some stuff done with it.
Exactly.
Now,
17.5%, exactly.
The concept that I'm talking about has been proven. A guy named Deeds out there on YouTube, he does some really impressive work, and he takes solar exciters and he actually turns the wireless energy back into usable current on the other side, running little electric motors and lights, and not just talking about fluorescent lights, I'm talking about tungsten element lights, ones that actually take resistance to work. And so it's already proven that you can take a radio wave and turn it back into usable energy. Take any energy form out there whatsoever, and you can store it, you can turn around and use it, and change it, whatever you want to do with it. This is why my plasma technology that I keep talking about, where you're energizing gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, is a way to take energy off of a generator and change that energy to something completely different to keep that generator from bogging down to begin with. Now, is part of the beating the dead horse that you were talking about?
Yeah, right. I'm going to explain that later on. People have nothing to do with what we're talking about here. That is strictly physical physics. But what you're talking about, the plasma thing, remember... I made that video about how I was showing up. I lit 15 fluorescent light bulbs with 20,000 volts. The thing is, each bulb gave off the same amount of light all the time. Now, I did it. I lit up one bulb, then I lit up two, then I lit up three. And each time, the more bulbs I put, the less wattage per bulb it took to light it. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but... honest to God, I got a video on YouTube, several, showing me do it. I mean, one bulb took like 14 watts. Two bulbs took like 23 watts. Think about that a minute. Well, 14 and 14 is 28. Then how can you run two on 23? Then I put in the third bulb, would be 23 would be what, 12.5 watts per bulb? Okay, so now I put in the third bulb, and all of a sudden, I'm lighting it up with 31 watts. So what is that? 10 and a third watts per bulb. And the more bulbs I put in, the less wattage per bulb it took. So until I finally got down to where I was lighting 15 bulbs with less than 4 watts per bulb.
Yeah, and if you actually look on that oil burner igniter, was you using the AC version or the DC version?
I was using the AC version on those.
Yeah, but the DC version shows that it only takes so many milliamps to actually run this doggone thing.
Milliamps traded into watts, what would that be?
Shoot, I don't know, man. You'd have to ask the math portion of the deal with that.
Watts is nothing for you than your usability.
My point about that is that you're getting, like I said, I keep saying I don't care about current watts and amps. I only care about the pressure of the high voltage and this frequency of the high voltage.
That's what I'm trying to say. Now, if the gas in the fluorescent lights, when you run that high voltage through, it's actually UV rays that you can't even see, but it excites the gas, creates UV rays, but the UV rays bounce and hit the fluorescent powder and causes the UV rays to turn into visible light. My point is, if you put enough of these bulbs together, why couldn't you use them on a solar panel?
Well, here's another thing about that. Thomas brought some powder over, some glow-in-the-dark powder.
I got some.
And you can take a UV light, and you can put a UV light over the top of that, and it started energizing that powder to where it glows.
Right.
So you was talking about inside those fluorescent bulbs using UV.
Exactly.
So,
and UV is a lot cheaper to make, easier to make, and cheaper than visible light.
So what would stop a person from being able to basically use that doggone effect to embed into a solar panel those crystals like that would actually put off light and help the photoelectric portion of the solar panel?
Exactly. Think about this a minute. You're being bombarded by UV rays from the sun, so you take your solar panel and you cover it with this powder. All right. Now, you're being bombarded at night by UV rays as well. A lot more than visible light, but there's still a lot of UV rays hitting the earth. So now all of a sudden your solar panel is producing a lot of electricity in the daytime and more than it would normally produce at night.
Yeah, and anywhere where you have a heat source, you would have UV rays.
Exactly.
So, you know, they got these doggone really awesome cameras out there that can literally shine at the side of your house and they can show you where your heat's leaking out of your house.
Right.
The technology's been around for God knows how long. I just need to put one with the other, so to speak. Go to get to learn how the process of actually making LEDs functions and the process of this glow in the dark and the UV and all that kind of stuff. I can visualize solar panels that would literally glow in the dark after the light went out. Pick up UV energy, and you see where I'm going there?
Yes, I do.
And then, since LEDs only take electron flow in order to run, because when the LED, when the electrons interact with the material inside the LED, it releases photons of light. Well, light is heat, heat is light, and there's UV diodes out there as well.
Yep.
And so I'm seeing, you know, these folks are saying that solar power isn't efficient. You know, the efficiencies of it's not that good. Well, maybe not in the standard way that they're doing it, but we've sat here and talked to many times about all kinds of different possibilities, even submerging your solar panel in water so that it gets that refraction from the sun, from the water, and also keeps the solar panel cool. You keep something cooler, it's more efficient.
It's a known fact that if you cool the backside of a solar panel, you increase, depending on how much you cool it, you increase its efficiency anywhere from 15 to 20%. Just by cooling the backside. And the simplest way to do that is put water on it, which is going to take the heat up. So now all of a sudden you're heating water and making more electricity.
had a discussion with somebody about an internal combustion engine within the last day or so. Now, one of the things about internal combustion engines is they have a lot of waste heat. They generate a lot of heat that has to be dispersed via coolers and oil coolers and radiators kind of stuff. And so I'm sitting here thinking about this whole deal. If you only want the heat in the cylinder, then why are you building an engine that allows the heat to disperse throughout the entire block? You could literally build cylinders that were, let's say you take a block, you know where the normal piston, actually the cylinder for the piston is, right? You expand that a little bit, you put some ceramic in there that will hold the heat inside like a thermos, as opposed to allowing it to transfer from the piston to the actual block itself. See, when that engine's actually running, the vibration of that engine while it's running at high RPMs is actually causing it to heat up as well. So a lot of that is from the vibration of the engine running. It's like an exhaust system. There's heat coming out of the exhaust, but a lot of the heat on the exhaust is also from that exhaust vibrating and from that energy being pushed out the pipe. So if you could build a cylinder that was like a ceramic cylinder, and inside that ceramic cylinder you had a higher temp material sleeve such as platinum or titanium, I don't remember which one holds up to the most heat. Then you put your piston inside there. Well, it could get really hot inside that piston without transferring that heat to the block itself. You see what I'm saying?
I see exactly what you're saying.
Now you'd have a system to where your water jacket would be able to keep up with any heat that did leak out through the deal. You could actually have an internal combustion engine that you could go up and put your hand on it after it's been running for a couple hours, and it wouldn't burn you. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And it's not beyond the realms of possibility. I mean, back in the 50s, they had thermoses that had a glass center in there, and you could put either hot or cold in there. Get a hot coffee in there, and that coffee would stay hot all day long. That's amazing.
I believe the thermos is just about the smartest dingo-thing man's ever built, because just what you said. Think about it. There's no moving parts. There's no electronics. But you put hot stuff in it, it's keeping it hot. You put cold stuff in it, and it keeps it cold. Now, how does it know? Think about it.
Yeah, but see, here's the key, though. You use that same technology inside forever. If you got a V8, you got 8 cylinders in there. Each one of these 8 cylinders are separated from the actual block itself with that type of system. Now, it ain't going to obviously be glass, because glass probably wouldn't hold up very long.
Here you go, you just said the whole secret right there. Forget the ceramics. You just put the cylinder in a vacuum, the same as the thermos. Therefore, all the heat is contained in the cylinder.
Yeah, so the piston's still going to be able to get the work done. And the temperature of the cylinder, you could regulate, you know, by the way that you're putting the fuel inside there.
And the fuel would be part of the fuel. It would be a mix of the fuel that actually burned and water that actually turned to steam. So you could actually build a steam-on-demand engine.
Yep.
Doing just that. Instead of a water jacket, you have a vacuum jacket.
Yeah,
and then you inject water in with your gasoline or diesel fuel, which turns into steam, gives you more power, and keeps the engine running even cooler.
Yeah, you can literally guide all wasted energy where you wanted it, you know?
Exactly. That's the whole secret. Put up your wire, put up your railroad track, direct the heat where you want it to go.
And when you look at the one static electric motor that I was talking about that had the combs on there, you're not that much further off than a doggone jet engine. All right?
Right.
Now, if that thing was built with the turbines just like a jet engine, and basically the same style as the combs right there, you would get from that static engine a wind force that would be coming out the opposite direction. It would create a suction on one side and it'd push air out the other side, so you'd be able to get from a static motor the equivalence of a jet engine. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. 100%. Yeah, now you got exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, then you took one force, which was the static electricity, and you focused it down there, and now it's pulling in more energy from the atmosphere, which is pulling in more electrons and more static energy along with it, and it's causing that thing to speed up. So,
did you look over that guy's other videos, the one you posted a link to for his electrostatic motor?
No, I don't know which one we're talking about.
The little copper foil coated 3D printed electrostatic motor. You just posted the video for
today. Yeah. Well, no, I hadn't seen any of his other videos. That was just one that I came across that I wanted to share with everybody.
So yeah, he's got a plasma, a 3D printed plasma engine that runs off of static.
Huh. I'll have to get over there and look at that.
Yeah, should have went to see what else he does. I mean, if he puts something like that electrostatic motor up, imagine he's got to have an interest in this type of stuff.
Yep.
All right.
Might even want to contact him and bring him on the show sometime.
That's a good idea. There's a guy out there that... I see the plasma jet engine sale now.
Barry wants in, by the way.
You can bring him in. There's a guy out there that... he builds 3D printed electric jet engines. Now, if we could get a copy of that file that he prints those 3D jet engines out there and make some small minor modifications to it, we can turn that 3D printed jet engine into a static electric jet engine. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
By the same process of what he's doing, all these electrostatic motors, you could literally turn that doggone thing into a static motor. If you see, the basic concept of it is one of those models that I told you about where it had like a rimstar.org has a propeller on the other end of that thing. And so he's moving wind with that electrostatic motor. Now,
you know what? That patent that's floating around out there for the electrostatic motor that I said would give you a lot more torque, because basically it's producing a lot more surface area of static versus static pushing on each other and discharging. So you've got more surface area attracting too, where the static's been discharged, trying to pull something that has still got static on it to itself, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking it wouldn't be that hard to adjust the shape so that they're more like fan blades, like turbine blades, and reverse them. Reverse the blade design so that basically they can actually attract towards each other in opposite directions. So you've got two blades that are turning in opposite directions that keep firing off the electrostatic power that's coming from that and discharging it, and they're both pushing air.
Yeah.
So you could literally have that static just stair step down from one propeller or one turbine to the next, all the way through that turbine system.
Also, with that deal there, I'm holding in my hand an aluminum foil covered piece of styrofoam. And while I was running my test on my deal, because I know there's a tribal electric effect of styrofoam, and there's actually a list of different materials that have different tribal electric properties to them. But I took this aluminum foil covered chunk of styrofoam and I put it near the Van de Graaff generator, and the Van de Graaff generator about yanked it out of my hand. So the aluminum foil covered styrofoam actually acted like a magnet at the Van de Graaff generator. And as I put it in just the right area, you could actually feel there was literal torque coming from that Van de Graaff generator trying to attract this styrofoam to the top load. And so I got this crazy idea about putting styrofoam beads inside the rotors to see if I could use that effect to try to increase the power of that attraction to be able to get these doggone static motor that I'm doing, a dual rotor system, be able to run. What do you think about that?
Yep.
So there's a lot of materials out there that you know, static energy will either repel or work with, or, you know, someone to give electrons, someone to take them, someone to reject them, or whatever. And using those types of materials, I'm wondering if it ain't even possible to be able to 3D print with styrofoam rotors. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's possible. Thomas and I have discussed that several times.
If you could 3D print with styrofoam a custom rotor that you could put...
I'm not sure about the styrofoam at this stage of the game, but you can print with something called HIPS, which is high impact polystyrene. So it's solid plastic that's the exact same plastic they make styrofoam out of. Styrofoam is just foamed up polystyrene.
The thing is, if with 3D printer, you can print holes in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which would make it a lot lighter.
Right. You're basically looking at being able to print bubbles that have much thicker walls, and the bubbles are probably going to be bigger, too.
Right.
So.
And here's the thing Thomas and I have discussed, now that we're dealing with 3D printers, if you put the printing mechanism inside of a case and put helium in there, then the bubbles would be full of helium, making it even lighter.
Well, there you go, man.
Plus, what we discussed before with the static powerhouse that we've been planning on building.
So you could.
I've talked about back even whenever, as long ago as when I first joined the group, like within a few weeks of joining. You control the gas. That means you can control what triboelectric effect the gas that you're putting in there has too.
So to answer your question, Sid, is yes. If you use the same plastic that's used to make styrofoam, but put it in a 3D printer, you could print a propeller that had holes in it full of helium to where the propeller itself would almost be as light as styrofoam itself. Because actually, that's all styrofoam is. It's a polystyrene plastic that's full of air. Well, if you print it out, then the air would be a helium instead of air, and it would weigh a third of what it would if you just made it out of styrofoam. Not a third, but it would probably weigh twice as much as styrofoam. Maybe two times as much.
Well, that,
in other words, it would be super light and extremely strong.
That would unlock a whole lot of potentials because styrofoam is pretty doggone cheap. So,
yes, it is.
If you could build a rotor that not only would the rotor be lightweight, but you could actually have that rotor built into the shape of a turbine, so that now it's not only utilizing the static electricity, but the triboelectric effect of the styrofoam itself for attraction purposes, and the wind that it could actually cause to suck through one side, push out the other, to create thrust. Man, I could see you building a doggone static electric airplane that you throw it up there in the dang air and it probably won't come back down.
Thing is, there's plastics that if you blow air across it, produce static electricity. So if you built the fuselage and wings, the external part of the airplane, of that particular plastic, the faster it flew, the more electricity it makes, so the faster it would fly.
Yeah, it'd build up an ion wind behind it and keep that thing aloft. You'd have a doggone airplane that would stay up there forever.
It would not actually, but practically produce all of its own energy that it used.
Yeah.
At least 80% of it anyway. So you could build an airplane that could fly completely around the world 5 times on 10 gallons of fuel.
Well, the way I see it, if you could get that thing up on, if you go out there and you Google up on YouTube or whatever, 3D printed jet engines, and watch these guys with these doggone 3D printed jet engines, they'll set them on the table and they'll speed it up, and you'll see this thing walk across that table. That's a lot of power. And you could build one that would start off using electricity to get you off the ground, and then from that point on, create its own ion wind that if you ever had to use the doggone jet engine to steer with or speed up or whatever, that you'd have access to that power. So throw a couple flexible solar panels into the wings of that thing, And now you got a charging system that could keep that thing aloft for, man, ever. See what I mean? I know it sounds like science fiction, but think about where we came from and where we are today as far as technology. You see what I mean? Doggone, I must have lost every one of you. How's it going, Barry?
Good morning, Commissioner. Go ahead. I'm a little out of place in this room, but I'm just sitting here to get educated.
I was eating my coffee, so I didn't disturb anybody, but I was talking to you the whole time. I forgot I muted my mic. Yes, you're right on everything you just said. Everything. But Thomas and I have been working on this and thinking about it and discussing it and actually working on it for the past 6-8 months now.
Well, we were always talking about ways to what we could fund our research, and I would think that to build a toy that would stay aloft for a long time using nothing more than static electric buildup in the air.
Yes, there are plastics out there that the wind blows across them will produce a negative charge, and there are plastics that will produce a positive charge. So if you print one half of the airplane out of that, the outer skin, very thin, the outer skin of the airplane out of one, and the other side of the airplane, the outer skin is of the other, so you actually produce a negative and positive static charge. Therefore, it could actually be used to propel the airplane. I mean, the thing is, it may not propel it, but it would cause it to use a lot less fuel. Therefore, again, like I said, you could probably, possible to build an airplane that could circle the Earth 5 times on 10, 20, 30 gallons of fuel.
Well, the way I'm seeing it, you could actually get it to stay aloft just using nothing more than static energy, because I've watched a lot of different experiments with things like styrofoam and aluminum plates that you put anywhere near a static charge. When it builds that charge up, that thing will float right off the ground and shoot across the room.
All right, the thing is, styrofoam is polystyrene, and if it's shaped just like anything else, if it's shaped properly, it's really strong. In some cases, depending on what you do, it's almost as strong as steel itself. But yet, it's lighter than aluminum. Think about that. Lighter than aluminum and strong as steel. I mean, come on. And it's an electric charge. I mean, it's possible. Everything you're talking about is possible. It's just nobody's working on it except me and Thomas that I know of.
Well, I'm excited about this whole concept because, like I said, when I started off this journey on alternative energy, I'm looking for plausibility, you know. I'm looking for something that basically your average Joe could not only understand, but your average Joe could recreate with off the store shelf kind of stuff. Everybody knows about static electricity. Static electricity is prevalent, you know. You rub your feet on the carpet, you shock your brother on the ear, that kind of jazz. They always have warnings that, you know, when you go to the fuel station, to make sure you ground yourself to the car when you get out, because your clothes rubbing against the vinyl seat will build a charge up on you, and then you can shoot.
You better ground yourself before you wreck yourself?
Yeah.
and half the gas station.
What if you applied this system or theory or whatever, plausibility, to an automobile? The average automobile sits perfectly still more than 3/4 of the time of its life. But there's a wind blowing around it, and it's an electric car, so you've got batteries in it. Well, you're driving down the road, it's producing a tremendous amount of electricity to run the vehicle, but you've got batteries in it too. So, but when it's sitting still, it's still producing electricity, still charging the batteries. So it would work fantastic on an electric car.
Well, using everything that we know in science about hydrodynamics and jet engines and static energy and how it's actually produced, you could literally build inside of a car a tunnel ram system that would have a jet engine that would literally pick up a massive static charge. Using that process where the guy in the video that Stephen Gibbons posted in there with doggone water as a rotor, Now you're talking about taking that static energy and pressure and turning it into hydraulic pressure that could in turn basically act as a torque converter in a car. So I can see an electric motor that you could start up this car with, drive down the road, pick up the wind as it's flowing through the car. It's not slowing down the car because of the way it's designed. It's aerodynamic because it's sucking at certain RPMs. It starts to suck air in and push air out the back. So it would just basically flow through the entire system of the car. And the only thing you're using that turbine for is to actually produce thrust from the back and a suction from the front, where the faster you went, the more pressure you'd be pushing out the back, the less hard that electric motor would have to move or work in order to keep you going forward. You see what I'm saying?
You know, the thing is, if you take plastics that actually produce static charge with the wind blowing over, the more aerodynamic they are, the more static electricity they produce.
Yeah. So I'm saying, we could actually 3D print a RC car using everything that I'm talking about right now, basically building some static electric turbines in the front of this car, make it aerodynamic to where it starts off using regular RC motor to get it going. Once it gets going, we could actually be able to measure the efficiency of that electric motor. The faster this thing got to going, that we could tell by, you know, how much draw that the motor is actually pulling now on the battery than it was before the system. You see what I mean? We could run the system with the same motor, same body style of the car without the turbines working, and see how long we could run that car. Then we could turn around and do the one with the turbines built into it that's pulling the air through there and producing a static charge, which would also be picking up static charge off the rubber of the tires as the tires rolled across the road. It'd be picking up it as the wind was pulling across the outside of it. You see what I mean?
One of the experiments that Thomas and I have been discussing, and we haven't actually gotten into working on it yet, but one of them is we're going to buy one of those toy electric quadrocopters, which has four propellers on it.
Yeah.
We're going to put the propellers out of a plastic that makes static electricity. Now we're going to fly the helicopter or the quadrocopter on a fully charged battery and see how long it will fly. Then we're going to put these special propellers on it and capture that static electricity to recharge the battery as it's flying to see if we can get it to fly for a longer period of time.
Well,
if we can do it a longer period of time, then what we said earlier about making all aircraft make a skin, super, super thin skin, maybe 1 or 2 millimeters thick, to actually cover an airplane, one side on one type of plastic, the other side with another type of plastic, so that you have a negative and positive charge to recharge the battery. And therefore, you can run the airplane on jet engines and electric.
If you had the the propellers set up to pick up static charge and shoot them across tiny spark gaps to capacitors, you could actually use a system kind of like a variac to slowly bring that capacitor around to discharge into the battery banks. If you're running the thing on super caps, then you wouldn't have to worry about battery banks, so that would take off part of the load. But if you understand how a variac works, or a potentiometer, it's got like a little thin layer of carbon, and it's less conductive on one side and more conductive on the other side. So you could set up your servos in the copter to literally turn this capacitor around to slowly, so that it gets to the other side and becomes the most conductive and discharges that safely into the next capacitor that's actually running the motor. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Thomas, what would the smallest thickness we could actually print with a 3D printer? It was way less than a millimeter, wasn't it?
Yeah, whatever the squeeze point is for 0.2 millimeter of filament.
0.2 millimeter, but we would need at least two thicknesses to have any strength at all, right? But if it was glued to or somehow adhering to the outer skin of the aircraft, it could be just 0.2 millimeter thick.
Right.
And it practically...
Well, it'd be a little thicker than that, because you're talking about a round object that's coming out that's 0.2 millimeter, and then it's going to spread out a little bit. But it's still going to be less than 0.3.
Right.
It'd be more than 0.2, but way less than 0.3.
You print it out 0.5 millimeter with no problem and no problem with strength, correct?
Right.
Especially if we had some kind of adhesive or some kind of a way to make it fasten to the aluminum outer portion of the aircraft itself.
Mm-hmm.
So everything you're talking about, Shazam, everything is absolutely plausible. It is absolutely doable. Just need somebody with enough money to back us so that we can get it done.
Yeah, that'd be a good thing. You know, I'm excited about all this stuff because since I was a kid.
Kickstarter and Indiegogo campaign. Put our idea together and do what we can as far as getting it done, so we've got plenty of video and whatnot to show what we're doing, and then make some sort of items that we could basically give away for, you know, the what they call perks. And people who fund it basically get a little this or a little that out of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I think that we could actually design a 3D printable model airplane using the concepts that we're talking about, where this thing, you know, you throw like a styrofoam airplane, it'll go pretty far. But if you could build one 3D printed out of specific types of plastic that would build up a static charge while it's in the air, and be able to stay aloft a whole lot longer. Could you imagine how incredible that toy would be as far as people out there who would want to play with that doggone airplane?
Yep.
I mean, after throwing a styrofoam airplane around for a while, people get tired of running over to picking it up and getting it back in the air again. But imagine you throw that thing up in the air and it stays up in the air for a half an hour at a time.
Right.
Yeah, and you could actually run guide wires on them like they used to do the old doggone... Before they had RCs, they had guide wires that actually steered the plane, where you had to go around in circles and they'll make it throw up after you play with them for about an hour.
Yeah, big time. You see what you had for breakfast that morning.
Yeah, but either way, you could actually build a styrofoam airplane that wouldn't take any batteries. You just get it up in the doggone air, and it would do just like a glider does, but with the exception is it would produce its own ion wind from picking up a static charge in the air, and be able to fly this thing around for until you get bored with it.
You know what the next step would be, too? It'd be just like the pop-pop boat. People would want to scale it up where you could put a man in it.
Yeah. And it's fully plausible.
Mm-hmm.
Completely plausible.
So,
absolutely.
This is why I'm so excited about it. Like I said, since I was a kid, I was born curious, I guess. I used to take things apart to see what made them tick, and... Actually, got in trouble a few times for sticking tweezers in the light sockets to see what kind of reaction I was going to get. And I blew a big pair of tweezers in half one time. Put myself clear across the house, too.
Oh, I just ordered those things you wanted me to order that you put in 12 volts and they produced 400,000 volts.
Yeah,
Those
things right there would be perfect for being able to use a small amount of voltage to actually produce a static charge on the plane itself.
Right.
And that would actually create like a Venturi effect when it comes to the atmosphere, because if you notice, like I've been saying, right before that doggone energy builds up high enough to literally leap across that spark gap, you can feel an ion wind being generated as it's sucking in atmosphere towards that charge.
So would this thing create ion wind or not?
Oh, yeah. Any high voltage creates an ion wind. The negative ion generator creates an ion wind.
We got 10 of them coming.
Well, we could do a lot with them.
So we build us a big glider, about 8 foot wing spread or 10 foot wing spread, and fasten those on as engines, five on each side.
There was videos quite some time back where they were using discharging capacitors to cause rotation. They had capacitors on like a pinwheel, and they would hit it with a high voltage, and every time one of these capacitors would pop and discharge, it would produce an ion wind and spin that thing around in circles. So that same concept could actually be used, and that's another thing that, going back to that Maxwell capacitor that I'm talking about, I'm not sure what the actual farad range or microfarad range is on it, because it's an older capacitor and the numbers and stuff is all rubbed off on it. But I can tell you right now that the pressure, the acoustic pressure wave set off when this thing is charged up like it was, whenever I discharge it, it sounded like a shotgun going off. And so if it sounds that loud, then you know there's a lot of pressure being released from that capacitor. You see what I'm saying? And that's power. There's usable work that can get done out of capacitors. Everything from just lighting light bulbs to actually causing propulsion on, like, that pinwheel deal that I was talking about. So taking all these things in consideration with each other, you could build a static deal with that had capacitors in there that would be charging up while that doggone thing was, flying through the air. And as soon as they get charged up, you'd hear this big old pop. So you could actually make this doggone, you know, like the pop-pop boat had that little noise that made when the diaphragm was expanding and contracting. Yeah. Well, this airplane, when you throw it through the air, would be going through the air going pop, 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 pop. You know, sound like one of them old style airplanes that they used to run back in the, you know, old days. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So the potentials are unlimited. We're only limited by our imagination, and of course, obviously limited by our financial situation as well. But I'm excited to get these things out there on the table, because even if somebody else runs with the doggone idea, be best that we get one of these ideas that we keep underneath our hat long enough to get out there on the market. That way we can use that to fund our research. You know, that's the only way that I would be, you know, interested in doing like a GoFundMe account or something like that, was that, like Thomas said, they get something for their donation. And, and the long-term goal means that everybody's going to benefit by the experiments that we do and the final product at the end. Because I can see a static generator that you could literally build into the side of your house that would use everything that nature's already provided to run your energy for your house and be perfectly safe to boot. Because the lightning bolt is only dangerous when it discharges.
What's it called? High voltage module generator. It's 6 volt input.
Yeah.
Holy cow. 400,000 volts output.
Well.
And I ordered 10 of them.
Like I said, a lightning bolt is only dangerous on the discharge, because it has had the opportunity to build up so much pressure that it literally ionized the air. And if you can see a lightning bolt, you're watching plasma in action, because it is literally energizing the air around it into the fourth state of matter, creating plasma. We know about plasma cutters and how much heat they can produce, and that's how a lightning bolt is able to literally start a fire on a solid tree. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And melt sand into glass. So how much, what's the temperature of melting temperature of glass, Thomas? About a couple thousand degrees?
Yeah, it depends on the glass you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about just sand. How a fulgurite is made. Okay, like lightning glass.
These things are 24 millimeters in diameter and 63 millimeters So 24 millimeters, that's roughly 1 inch in diameter. So if we printed the wings of the glider, say an inch, a quarter, inch and a half in, thick, and let's see, probably about 6 or 8 inches wide, we could get all 10 of them in the wings, 5 in each wing. And with an 8-foot wingspan, it would take very little movement of air to get them aloft. This is highly possible.
You know, one thing that was always discounted in the alternative, I don't know, I didn't necessarily say discounted, but not really paid attention to in the alternative energy or the UFO community was they were always trying to talk about how UFOs would be using magnetism to actually use for levitation wise. But if you actually study static electricity, you can see objects jump from one. I watched literally a little bead of styrofoam that was laying on the floor while I had the Van de Graaff generator. It literally walked up the leg of the table and went across the table and worked its way over to the source of the doggone electrostatic motor that I'm working on. And so it literally climbed up off the floor. It followed all the way up. And then this next video that I'll do, I'll show you how styrofoam like just climbs up the wall. Alright? It started on the floor, climbed up the leg of the table, worked its way across the table, and right towards that static charge. And so, imagine if you had a saucer-shaped ship that would literally build up a static charge and create an ion lift. You could literally use the atmosphere as your propulsion. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know that sounds crazy. We're talking UFO here, but literally, technology like that, you know, there's God knows how many trillions of volts of energy, electricity in the air. There's tons and tons. We live in an electric universe. And so, with that said, you'd be able to pick up energy as you go. You'd be able to guide the energy where you wanted it, use electrostatic turbines to literally produce the thrust to move you forward and back. And all you would have to do to shut the power off is ground it all together to where everything levels itself out and the thing would drop out of the sky like a rock. So, instantaneously, if you had this thing that was hovering around using the static lift and the ion wind underneath it to actually lift up, if you wanted to go down, let's say, 1,000 feet, like rapidly, you could sit there and ground this thing all to itself. It would stop the reaction of the ion lift and begin to fall. And in the same instance, if you wanted to raise it back up, go straight up in the doggone air, you could flip that switch back over to allow that ion lift to come back in there, and it would pop back up just like it was before. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And it's not beyond the realms of possibility. I got a picture over there on the podcast page of ShazizRadio.com. It's in the Mad Science podcast section, I believe. But there's a doggone picture that I drew of a ion drive system that you could actually use in, let's say, if he's going to travel through space, to take, you know, micrometeorites or dust or gas particles or whatever is actually out there in space and use that as your doggone fuel. And you would only have to have a noble gas and a high voltage power source to literally create a reactor that would energize that gas into the plasma state, which would create that ion wind that we're talking about, which would, you know, when the material was coming through this deal, it would be charged and create a propulsion out the back end of it. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And for guidance purposes, all you'd have to do is be able to shut off vents on either the right or the left side or both, and either slow it down or open them both wide up, open so that thrust would resume again. You could turn left and right just by open and closing vents to allow material to flow freely through the system. And it's not going to create a drag because it's actually going through aerodynamically through the motor itself in order to... one side creates a Venturi effect, which creates a suction that pulls material into it, and the opposite side of it, you know, like opposites attract and positives repel. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
When these particles are being sucked through this motor, they're being charged up just like a static charge, and they're being forced out the back. So the faster you went, the more power and the more stuff you'd send through there, it'd be ludicrous of how fast you could go in space with a drive system such as that. You see what I mean?
Ludicrous speed.
Yeah.
I was just reading the specs on that booster thing, and it needs some excess external cooling, of course, but it's plane firing, therefore you've got your air to cool it. But it will run off of a lithium, an ion lithium battery for a cell phone, which are very light, very small, and the shape of them is perfect for actually printing inside the wing of the aircraft. I've got to move the mic.
All right. So, basically, we could actually take that concept and actually put it into the airplane concept that we're talking about as well. Because if you ever watched one of those doggone negative ion generator filters that they put in there for your house, any dust in the air charges that dust and attracts that dust to plates. So the dirty air in the room is actually sucked towards that negative ion generator inside there, and the filter picks up the dust. So that concept there, it doesn't necessarily have to be dust. It could be oxygen, hydrogen, or nitrogen in the air that would be actually attracted into it, and some different molecules would, basically try to get away from it once it got charged. It'd want to jump across like that aluminum plate or the styrofoam plate. You see what I'm talking about, Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
So, exotic materials and gases that we could actually use, Man, that's why I keep saying I'm so excited about this static energy, because it goes hand in hand with this plasma technology, because when you energize gas into plasma, you can feel radiant energy coming off of that. A lot of people is all hollering about X-rays and gamma rays and all this kind of stuff. Well, you'd have to do some tests and make sure that there's not, but I've messed around with plasma technology for a long time and never had any harmful side effects from energizing gas into the plasma state. I mean, they actually got a plasma globe that you can buy at the specialty shops, that little lightning ball. Everybody's seen them. You put your finger up there and it'll follow your finger around. It's really neat. You sit there and watch them for hours or whatever. But you can feel a static charge build up around that plasma. So it's actually drawing energy in from the atmosphere around it. And at really high voltage, you begin to create ozone. So, where do we go with this, man? I want to literally try to get as many people as possible excited about science. Not like modern day science just gets on my doggone nerves, because back in the day whenever I was going to school, we did real science, real hands-on science. We did real experiments. We took chemicals and mixed them and seen reactions and stuff like that. Modern day science is so litigious, they're worried about getting sued, that they don't teach the kids like they should. You could read a book forever and a day, but if you don't have some sort of hands-on, you understand the concept of it, but if you've ever never seen it actually in play, what's the point? You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Well, of course, modern-day science just teaches us what they want us to know, which is there is no real science anymore, and real science is really necessary. If real science is applied to what you guys are talking about, the sky would be the limit.
That's
and I'm
what
not
I'm
a scientist.
Saying.
I sit in here, I sit in here to get inspired and listen to you guys talk and listen to the ideas going around. I'm not a scientist. I can't add technical jargon to what you guys are talking about. But looking at from my point of view, I go, hey, let's get everybody on board and let's educate people what can be done with this, because we're talking unlimited power and the answers to all the problems we see right now on the planet.
And how, brother? Everything from water water filtration. I watched this doggone deal yesterday that has a it uses condensation. It uses the theory of how condensation is generated to actually pull water out of the air. Basically, what it was, there's this long tube with a metal container, like stainless steel container, that goes, you bury it deep down in the ground. And it has a little helix blade on the top that circulates wind around it, and it even works even when there ain't no wind. But all it does is it basically allows wind to be blown down this tube, and the wind temperature on the outside is different than the wind temperature on the inside, and the hydrogen and oxygen get sucked down in there and condenses into water. And so this thing builds up water just by sitting there and letting the wind blow it. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. There's an old survival deal where you can take plastic and you can put it over like a bowl and put it out in the sun. Well, the temperature difference between the air inside and the outside will build up moisture underneath there. And so every so often, all you got to do is raise up that piece of plastic and put it back down over the lid, and it puts fresh air inside there, which then in turn condenses and builds up moisture, and you can literally drag water right out of the air. Dehumidifiers have been doing it for years. So if you could get a dehumidifier into countries that are having trouble getting fresh water, and you could build that dehumidifier in a manner by which where the water collection isn't getting cruddy, you know, you wouldn't want to use some of these dehumidifiers that have like metal trays to catch the water in. You'd want something that had some stainless steel or something that you could actually drink out of without getting poisoned, if you understand what I'm saying.
I think that's what you're saying. That's a cool idea. I like it.
But the concepts of it always been, you know, the basic science, if you go back and you look at some of the devices that they were doing back in the 1700s, 1800s, and 1900s, all the way up to the 60s, and then it seemed like it dropped off from there, where all the mad scientists basically got gathered up to universities, and suddenly they had an agenda going in a different direction than teaching people real science. You know, governments jumped in there. They found some nifty gizmo that they thought they could use for a war machine. You know, they would grab that up. Or if it looked like it was going to drain money off of J.P. Morgan or any of the, General Electrics or, fuel industries or whatever, they got gathered up. And they didn't show these devices in school. I didn't see these devices till we got out here on YouTube and started talking about alternative energy. And people were surfing the net for all different types of different devices out there. And we're finding things that were, going way back, carbon inside of a glass ball that basically you spin around like Van de Graaff, and that carbon builds up a static charge inside there that will discharge through the glass ball. You know, and that one went way back. The Lord Hawksby device, I think it was. The Hawksby device, that's what it was. There's a picture of a steam engine that was nothing more than a ball with two pipes coming out each end facing in opposite directions, and it was on a spindle that when you put heat underneath there, you put water inside the deal, and it would spin this ball around in circles. So it was a steam engine. It was a jet engine. And if you took it even farther and figured out a way to put magnets on there where the heat from the process wouldn't destroy the magnets, you could have actually made an electrical generator that just boiled water and spun around in circles and charged up batteries or whatever. But this is all old technology. Look at Tesla technology. I mean, look how much came out of Tesla's work, his wireless energy transfer. You know, had they would have allowed him to follow his dream to the fullest and be able to transmit energy wirelessly to everybody out there, we probably wouldn't be talking about this, because everybody would be out there busy working, seeing where else we can go with this. A Tesla coil inside of a vacuum energizing gas into the argon state would be amazing, because all that energy that would be normally dispersed into the atmosphere you know, like I said, just like lightning functions, the air in the atmosphere is positively charged, and the Earth is negatively charged. And when that energy builds up, it's going to ionize the air and create a path to ground, and until it zaps and balances itself back out. But imagine that, all that energy, including just static electricity alone, being focused into a system to build up pressure on a rapid scale. You could literally develop an electrostatic motor that would rival any internal combustion engine out there, and I'm even saying one that was running nitrous oxide or alcohol burners. The pressure inside, if you've ever watched a static discharge, that happens so incredibly fast, I don't think you could time it out how fast that energy jumped from one into the spark gap to the next. You see what I mean?
Yep.
That's incredible speed. And it literally produces a sonic boom in the process. You hear that pop going across there. So you're getting audible energy, you're getting visible light, and you're getting heat and pressure all in one process. Now, I know there's people out there that think I'm insane. But if they'd actually take the time to actually, do the work and try it before they denied it, you might be surprised. I might not be as stupid as I look.
You just look crazy.
Yeah, I'm not the only one out there saying
it. You don't look stupid. You really do look like a bad scientist, though.
Really?
But crazy, no.
Well, you blow up a balloon, and you can only blow that balloon up so far before that container can't hold any more pressure, and it explodes. The same thing with a capacitor. You charge a capacitor up, you're filling it up with pressure. If you keep on pressurizing that capacitor, one of two things is going to happen. It's either going to leap across from terminal to terminal and discharge itself, or it's literally going to blow up. Have you ever seen an electrolytic capacitor blow up?
Yep.
Looks like a doggone M80 went off. It sounds like a two.
Sounds like two.
So, that just shows you can get work done with voltage alone.
I tell you what, I thought pressure. If you blow one up about the size of your thumb, that thing would take your hand off.
Yep. If you're filling up a water balloon with water, you better do it like slowly. You better fill it up slowly so you can gauge the pressure, because it too fast, that water balloon, splat, it's all over you.
Yep.
So it works with every single energy out there. Pressure works with everything out there. You seal something in let me tell you the story again about my what my wife did to me out by the burn pile.
Yeah, I remember that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, either way, we live out in the country, so we can burn our trash out in the country, all right? Because we don't have trash pickup. Well, she gets some old outdated cans of cream corn and decides to throw them in the trash. Well, so I go out there and I'm nonchalantly burning off the trash, kind of daydreaming, and all of a sudden I hear this big old boom! And I'm running for my life, and there's cream corn flying past my ear, right? And so I call her up on the phone. I said, "Hey, Lee." She said, "What?" I said, "Did you put a can of cream corn in the trash?" And she said, "Yeah, why?" And I said, "Don't you know what happens when you heat something and the pressure can't be released?" And she says, "No." I said, "Well, it blows up." I said, "You almost got me killed." And she said, "Are you standing next to the burn pile?" Because by that time, I'd done walked back to the burn pile. I thought the party was over. She said, "Are you standing next to the burn pile?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." "Why?" She said, "Because there's six more cans in there."
Oh,
and no sooner than she got those words out of her mouth, they began to pop, and I was running for my life, man. It looked like somebody's shooting a shotgun full of cream corn at me. I had corn in my hair all over the place.
you're lucky it was cream corn and not whole kernel corn, or you've been covered with blisters.
I'm telling you.
Somebody did that last year when we were up doing mushroom shiz. They threw a full can of beans unopened into the fire.
Oh my god.
I don't know what they were thinking, but there was a girl sitting beside the fire, and it went off, hit her in the leg, completely covered her in beans.
Dang.
It wasn't funny when it happened, but it was. That's why I was chuckling in the background here, because I watched that happen. Somebody threw a can of beans in the fire. That wasn't too smart, guys.
So for those of you folks who think it's a good idea to put hairspray cans or doggone any sealed container with any liquid or whatever in a burn pile, don't do it.
That's a party favor, man. get boxes, whole boxes full of like thousands of used Bic lighters, man, and toss them in there.
Oh, yeah. There's a video on YouTube, something like that.
Hey, we done it. We did it 2000, man. That was our 99 to 2000 New Year's Eve party.
Well,
you could, and the thing is, they aren't even that loud. They don't like kabang. It's more like a boom, and you can feel it from like 50 yards away, like a giant fist just smacking you. The whole body just
boom. Well, even in that, there's something to be learned about the pressure released in something that's contained like that. Now, I told a story about a video. I didn't have opportunity to. I told it in a video, but I didn't have opportunity to videotape what was going on because it was something that occurred that caught me off guard, and it wasn't in the process of videotaping. But I energized a little small vacuum, radio vacuum tube full of argon. All right, it was probably a rectifier tube or something like that. I don't remember which actual tube it was, but it was a small one. All right, and I put 20,000 volts of electricity directly to that from that Beckett oil burner igniter. That thing glowed the brightest purple that you could possibly imagine. I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, it was just like sitting there glowing about the size of a doggone softball. It looked like that big of a glow. But when that thing finally couldn't take the pressure anymore, it burnt a perfect circle hole in the side of that doggone tube that released energy. I don't even know how to explain it other than every single monitor that I had, anything that was gas-filled, fluorescent bulbs, just glowed for a solid 3 minutes after that instantaneous release. And that's pretty impressive. So that got me really seriously interested in plasma technology. It was a sheer accident that it happened, and I'd love to replicate it on video and show everybody how it did exactly what I said it did. But that air around was just energized for 3 solid minutes after that doggone release of that plasma. Does anybody have any idea how that could have possibly been happening?
Oh, no, I made a mistake. No one at all.
Nobody? I done lost everybody.
Oh, I can't explain that. I'm out.
Well, look at a nuclear bomb, an atomic bomb, when they go off. It's pretty impressive how far, you know, you get like this implosion, explosion kind of deal, and that energy just expands and radiates out, and so literally produces radiation that makes everything hot in the general vicinity or nearby for quite some time before it finally disperses. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so whatever I accidentally did in my lab was a pretty impressive amount of power coming from one little tiny freaking tube. Now, example of that power is if you take and fill a balloon up with hydrogen and you ignite it. I did a video called Hydrogen Danger, and when we filled a balloon up with hydrogen and then we ignited that thing, the acoustic wave and the pressure off of that was so entire loud that it just, the microphone on the camera couldn't pick it up. It sounded more like a pew, but if you was literally standing there when it occurred, it was a boom. It was a loud, Boom. That's the difference. The camera couldn't pick that noise up, but if you could have felt that acoustic wave coming off of that one balloon full of hydrogen, that's a lot of power. So focus that into a cylinder for an internal combustion engine. Now what you got? You see what I mean?
Yep, I do.
So that one experiment, along with a few others that I did in my lab, that's what got me interested in the power of plasma. The fact that you can take a penny or a piece of aluminum foil and put it on the outside of a plasma globe, and you can actually feel heat being transferred through there, heat and electricity being transferred through that glass to your finger. You can hold a fluorescent bulb up around that thing and you get radiant energy that will energize that gas and light that bulb up. There's a whole lot more than meets the eye to plasma. There's helium, neon, argon, krypton, and xenon is just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the noble gases out there. Each one of them produce their own color. So,
I just had those 400,000 watt. I mean, 400,000 volt deals that I ordered.
Yeah.
You and I have lit many fluorescent bulbs with 20,000 volts. I lit 15. I'm wondering what 400,000 volts do to it.
Be nice to find out. Krypton seems to produce white light, and so. I don't know exactly what light spectrum that a solar panel actually gets its reaction from. I don't know what light spectrum is. I know the sun beating down on it. Is it a combination of infrared and heat or whatever? Something going on how the solar panels actually function. I don't understand all the full concept. If I got a general idea, you know, photovoltaic cells or whatever. But what I was wondering is if you could put a static charge on a krypton-filled solar panel that would basically energize that krypton into the plasma state, which is, if you look at the different color spectrums that are coming off of the different gases, which one of these gases would actually assist that doggone solar panel in working. You see what I'm saying? So even at night, you could use static discharges or electricity picked up out of the atmosphere or whatever to, or even a Van de Graaff or Wimshurst-style generator on a windmill to keep that krypton inside that solar panel fully charged up so that you constantly have light on there day and night on that solar panel. You walk past your solar panels at night and it'd be like a light. What do you think? And it wouldn't be hard to inject krypton into a solar panel. Same process like you guys were talking about putting helium into styrofoam. Are you guys still there? Man, it's terrible for radio. Alright, so there's a whole lot of ideas on the table now. Depends on how far people want to take them is going to be determined on how far we get with it. I want to build a rolling billboard. I might actually have to take the advice and try to do a GoFundMe account or something like that. But if I do something like that, I want to ensure that it belongs to the people. Don't belong to one individual. It belongs to everybody. So, I wonder how many people you can fit on one title to one vehicle. Maybe we have to start a corporation. And everybody who's a shareholder in the corporation actually has a stake in that rolling billboard. What do you think?
It's a good idea. I really do.
Because I want this stuff to get done, and it's obvious we can't get it done You know, I can put all these ideas out there and companies can listen into the radio show and say, hey, that's a good idea. Get our team on it, you know, and they work on it and they patent it and they steal it right out from under everybody. But imagine if we could work on this on demand and actually put it out real time in front of people, and now everybody and his brother knows about it. There ain't no patenting process necessary because it's already out there in the public. You see what I mean?
Public domain.
Yeah. That's what I'd like to see happen. And these little devices that I keep talking about, like the magnetic levitation and the little, you know, little models that have you know, static electric motors or whatever, I'd like to gather up as many of these models as I could to put in that vehicle so that when we go to fairs or alternative energy conventions or whatever, we can put them on the table, and by people seeing them things actually function and open up in a dialogue, how's this thing actually working? You see what I mean?
Right.
And by doing that, get more ideas flowing to the table. To basically get everybody excited about it, man. I'm excited about science, but I guess that just makes me a science geek. But I want the old school science, and I want to bring that old school science to light for the future science. These exotic materials that we keep talking about, then there's so much information out there. You know, the way that certain materials interact. I was watching a video yesterday about the guy went out and bought off of the periodic table. He went out and bought all these different elements, and he was testing diamagnetics and paramagnetics and seeing which ones attract and which ones repelled and such. And one of the things that he showed was silver would repel from a magnet. Well, the repulsion isn't a lot, but could it be modified in such a manner that the repulsion could be amplified? You see what I mean? Instead of, like, let's say you got a silver coin and a heavy-duty magnet, right? Well, it's obvious, unless that coin is dangling from a string, you push the magnet, it might repel that coin a little bit. But what if that coin was basically atomized down in the dust and put on a surface area to where now you got a bigger surface area of that particular, I guess it'd be diamagnetic, right? That's one that repels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now you got this surface of silver particles on like a sail, like a solar sail or something, and you put the magnet towards it and it repels that paper away from it. You don't want nothing to do with that magnet. You see what I mean?
Yep.
That's what I think about when I watch these videos. How far can you actually take this doggone idea? That wrapping
magnetic energy has been taken quite a bit further by using diamagnetic, paramagnetic, and ferromagnetic materials and making crystals. That's where the neodymium magnet comes from.
Yeah, and it's pretty powerful.
Like I said, there's 14 iron atoms to every 2 neodymium atoms and 1 boron atom. The boron is diamagnetic. Obviously, the iron is ferromagnetic. That's the magnetic, where the magnetic field is being generated from. It's being repelled away from the boron and channeled through the neodymium, which is paramagnetic. So it will magnetize when there's a magnetic field on it, but it won't hold it.
Well, I got a
apparently it can, that system can amplify it.
I got a black mark on my thumb that's been there starting to grow its way out, but that black mark on my thumb came from 2 neodymium magnets slamming together on my thumb.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of power, man, and it hurt.
They don't call them rattlesnake magnets for nothing.
Yeah.
They were quicker than a rattlesnake.
It was by far the least pleasant
thing.
And
they will bite you.
They still bite you.
It was not pleasant in any sense of the... It hurt. And I probably said some things that I probably should not have said. If there was not a certain bad word in the book of bad words, I created it that day.
You know, I've got some really strong neodymium magnets. I mean, really strong. I mean, like, pull 150, 200, 200 plus pounds.
That sounds like they'll take your arm off.
Yeah, I was carrying one day in my hand, and I walked by my workbench, and 16 to 18 inches away, it snatched a 6-inch crescent wrench that far with enough power, it broke three of my fingers.
Dang.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
it hurt a long time. I've had them, some of them pulled, you know, like 112 pounds, something like that, that snapped together and picked chunks of meat out of my hand. I mean, literally tear the meat, a hole in my skin, just tear the meat loose faster than you can blink it. I mean, a big hole.
Well,
compared to, like, the butt size of a pencil lead, about a quarter of an inch long.
If science has the capability of producing a magnet that strong, and then you're able to 3D print and custom build your own magnets to where you can make it essentially a monopole magnet, that's a whole lot of force, man. I still say, even after all these years of nobody being able to successfully build a magnet generator that ran off just the magnetic force alone, there's been lots of attempts, and there have been a lot of, you know, it's a certain point where when, like, they'll set up these rows of magnets in kind of a V shape, and when you put it through the first part, the repulsion will basically spin the magnet all the way up till it gets to the end.
You know, I've got one electromagnet that at 12 volts has 840 pound pull. I have another electromagnet that at 110 volts has 1800 pounds of pull. I wonder what we could do with those.
Holy smokes, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I got one for you to try, Raymond. You got all those magnets?
Yep.
Now, look up that doggone deal where they actually put a V down there. And they put the magnets in between there, and that repulsion will push that magnet through to the other side.
Right.
And then it will attract it back. Well, imagine if you had, like, say, a bicycle wheel that was vertical, that had magnets on it.
Right.
And you got the first magnet you start through that V will spin it through to that other side. Before it has the opportunity to get the traction backwards, the next magnet's already going through the deal, pushing it out again.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Process by putting it in a V will spin that magnet out until it gets to the other side. See, the deal is they haven't been able to get it to spin around in a complete circle because of the cogging effect and it tracking itself backwards.
You know, the whole thing is the one magnet that's stationary, well, you want the V to turn. So the one that's stationary, okay, when it reaches its stopping point, because of inertia, it actually goes beyond that point and then comes back. But once it goes beyond that point, if you had an electromagnet right there, it wouldn't take very much power at all to kick it on by. But now, the whole time this wheel is turning, it has all these V magnets, they're passing copper coils.
Yeah.
Now, if you had the wheel heavy, but yet, heavy enough to cause a lot of inertia, right? But, it's there, it would work. You build it a big enough diameter, and with several Vs, and you only put just a few copper coils, it's highly possible. I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying it's highly possible you could actually use the V-gate system and work it right. But every one I've ever seen, they only build them 4 or 5 inches in diameter. I'm talking 6, 8, 10 feet in diameter.
Yeah, so you'd have actually gravity pulling down that wheel as when it's going by, and you'd actually build up some centrifugal force that would assist that to get past the cogging effect on the other end.
Exactly.
See, I still believe it's possible. I'm going to have to get a hold of me some doggone magnets and give it a shot myself, because I looked at all the different magnet generators. I've seen all the different versions of them that they're trying to do. There are some out there that claim they got magnet generators that are self-propelled, but...
last time I came up to your place, I brought a whole bunch of those hard drive magnets, a bunch of them. Didn't Thomas share any of them with you?
I think you guys took them back with you.
No, I didn't. I gave them to Thomas. They were a little box.
No, I think I left like that one plastic container. I took some of them because I'm going to grind them up to make that one deal I talked to you about.
Yeah.
And I want to make filament. We need to get an extruder so we can make our own magnetic powder filament.
Shazizz, right?
Pardon?
You left one container there for Shazizz?
Yeah, there's one up there.
I'll have to look around and see where it went.
It's about a 4-inch by 4-inch by 4-inch plastic see-through container. Mm-hmm. It's got a whole bunch of hard drive magnets in it.
Cool.
You made sure to take your cylinder magnets with you, though.
Yeah, you're going to say. Yeah, I brought a bunch of those up there, too. Well, we never got around to talking about magnets all over there. It was mostly about 3D printer and the CNC machine.
Well,
the static static system we were trying to put together.
But those hard drive magnets, I've got over 3,600 of those.
Well, either way, it just hit me like a ton of bricks on that deal because I watched a lot of videos. They're always trying to do them like horizontal, trying to get them to angle the magnets a certain direction, or the V one where it'll send it through one side.
Yeah, that's all ridiculousness. The magnetic field comes out of a magnet. It's either got a north or south field, but it is literally a sphere.
Yes.
It comes out as a bubble.
Yeah.
So if you do anything to disrupt that field, all you're doing is basically the equivalent of taking a water balloon and tying a corset onto it and squeezing it. You see how the balloon comes out of the ends. That's how the magnetic field's coming out.
I'm going to have to look up some more of these videos on the magnetic attraction, the ones where they're trying to do permanent magnet generators. And see which one was the B on there, because what I think I remember on there, they one guy, he built a little car on wheels, and he could get it to attract through the other side, but then it wants to pull itself back on the opposite side. So I'm thinking, if these were properly spaced on a wheel that was vertical as opposed to horizontal, you should be able to get that attraction and the fall of the wheel to assist to break past that cogging on the other side. I see it mechanically in my head, whether it's plausible or possible. There's only one way to find out, and that's to try it before you deny it.
Right.
And so, you know, in my mad science laboratory, I've blown up a lot of electronics and started a couple of fires testing. They don't call it mad science for nothing.
No.
You know, a few times after discharging capacitors, my wife would run in there because she'd hear this big old shotgun blast, and she'd come out there to see if I was still alive. Are you all right? Yeah, I'm fine.
Oh, Lord. Huh.
So anyway, rolling billboard. What do you guys think of the concept?
Yeah, I like it. I really like it.
I'd like to get that thing put together, get some artist to put some really cool graphics on the side of it that says Mad Science on there. And we could actually talk to other YouTubers out there and see if they would want to actually help sponsor it and put their logo for their YouTube channel and science and website on the side of that truck. NASCAR does it, so why couldn't Mad Science do it?
Yeah, really, why can't we?
So we get sponsors from other alternative energy researchers that wanted people to come look at their stuff. And go on a road tour, man. Finding the most genius people that we can. Be Skyping on the road.
All right.
Well, somewhere out there in some shed, in some old back room, or even up in some old attic, or even a basement. There is some old piece of technology that's been sitting around waiting for guys like us to find it. You know, the Mercury Arc rectifier back in the late 1800s. That was an impressive piece of equipment that I don't even believe that back in them days they recognized the full potential of what that thing was capable of doing. And so, with that said, there are other devices like that out there that, from history. That's pretty cool. You got that static charge going across there?
Yep.
For those of you on the radio who don't understand what it is I'm talking about, Raymond has a soda bottle, which would be a really cool video for him to do. And he peels the label down, and you can watch as the label wraps itself back around because of the static attraction to the bottle. It's pretty impressive.
That's your triboelectric effect. That's actually a perfect example of how it works. Contact.
Can you do a video on that, Raymond?
It's literally just pressing down and lifting up is enough to generate it.
Raymond, can you do a video on that? Because that's the very first time I've ever seen that done.
All right, I will.
I will share that video and I'll post it over here at ShazizRadio.com. But that'd be a good party trick for everybody.
Why not, doesn't
it? Yeah.
I will definitely do that today. As soon as the program's over, I'll make a video of this.
Well, that's impressive. I like that.
I mean, lift it right up.
He's peeling the label off the bottle, which is still attached on one other side, and the label is actually wrapping itself right back around the bottle.
I mean, lifts itself up in the air. Now, we're judging roughly 7 to 8 inches down, and it lifts it all the way up, plus the thickness of the bottle, which is about 3. So the pull power on that piece of plastic actually lifts it about 11 to 12 inches.
Yep.
Think about that. That's some pull power.
And it's wrapping it smoothly around the bottle.
Yeah, very smooth. Oh, I've got to make a video of that.
Yeah, that is cool. That is really right. Cool. And that's, when you're doing that, I'm seeing electromotive force.
Yes.
I'm seeing work get actually done. So, you know, hey. Anybody gets any anomalies like that and want to share them, we'd love to see it. You know, styrofoam. I got styrofoam inside this Franklin Bell, and you can sit there and watch as the styrofoam climbs up the wall inside there, as the charge and discharge is going on inside there. There's a whole lot more than meets the eye with it.
There's not a lot of weight there by comparison to a plane or something, but if you stop and think about it, that plastic does have weight.
Yeah.
And it's lifting at a full 12 inches.
So if the sky is charged higher and the opposites want to attract, if you have a negative ion generator on that plane, then it's going to want to attract to the opposite charge, right?
Right.
So a negative ion generator should be able to, in theory, either suck itself to the ground or pull itself to the air. You see what I mean?
Yeah, whoa, I gotta show you this. This is wild. Alright, look here. You take it and you rub it with your hands. Now watch it.
Goes out and stops.
Faster. Just rub it with your hands. Build the static charge. Then unwind it. Oh,
huh? I'm dead.
Oh, man, that is neat.
That'll make a good video. Make that video, Raymond, and I'll help you promote it, push it out there.
Okay. I will.
So anyway, we'll have to get those links. We need to start posting more links for those different charts of tribal electric materials so other people can find them. Just Google it up, folks. Tribal electric properties of different materials and diamagnetics, paramagnetics, and what was the other one, Thomas?
Ferromagnetics.
So between magnetism and static electricity and attraction and all the different anomalies that you can get out of each one of these, man, I'm telling you, we've got the science to do exactly what I've been saying for a long time. It's it's exciting because we're like at a new, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the Star Trek's always talking about, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Old Raymond's sitting over there having fun with his soda bottle and label. So you got anything? Got anything else you want to throw on the table there, Thomas or Raymond?
Nah, not right now. I'm having fun with this bottle. Cool.
Yeah, they say simple minds are amused by simple things.
That's right. I've never claimed to be brilliant.
Just hey, I've seen how simple things are at your place, is.
Yeah, so that's why I'm that's why I'm amused on everything.
You know, Billy got me think, messing with that. I was going to peel it off, because I was thinking about taking my plastic cutter and cutting another bottle the same size, take this part, put it up here, and then make a little sharp point come out there, and then drill a hole in here and put an air chuck, you know, fitting, you know, your quick connects, put the male, the male in, and then I was going to fill the bottle about half full, or maybe a third full of water, and then put about 100, 150 pounds of air pressure in there, and then turn it loose and see how high it would go.
Cool.
I got a friend of mine that he takes the 2-liter Pepsi bottles, and he does the same thing with them. And he puts them on his air compressor and hits it with about 200 PSI and then releases it, and it goes about 150, 200 feet in the air. But all the air comes out really fast. And I'm thinking, well, if you had water in it, it'd come out slower with more actual physical propulsion. I'm just wondering if I could get it up to about 300 or 400 feet.
Well, you know they have them doggone ion lifters that they make out of thin aluminum and mylar and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking it's possible to build a kite that would almost float itself, man.
Yes, 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 because I have seen an actual video of somebody took and built the ion generator themselves and made it super strong, and they had something that looked like a flying saucer, just about the size of a 9-inch pie pan. In other words, you're looking face to face. They set it on a fence post and remotely set the dang old thing off. This sucker shot up over 500 feet in the blink of an eye. It took off so fast, you couldn't actually see it move on the takeoff. In order to actually see it with a naked eye, you had to look up ahead of it about 100 feet. And when they said 3, 2, 1, when they said 0 and hit the button, you had to be looking up to see it.
Well,
otherwise, you wouldn't be able to see it.
I believe it, because watching how fast those pie pans will jump away from each other when they're charged or discharged, whichever, that's moving along at a pretty good click.
But this thing they had weighed roughly a half pound to 3/4 of a pound. I mean, it shot up over 500 feet in the air in less than the blink of an eye. I mean, it was amazing. So the ion propulsion is possible. It's absolutely possible. I've seen too many videos showing people doing it. You just got to scale it up, that's all.
Well, what do you say we take a quick coffee break and come back and polish off the last half hour of the show?
Yeah, good, because I want to discuss something with Thomas about making that glider ion propelled.
All right, everybody, you're listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned. We're on a quick music break, and then we'll be back to wrap it all up. Stay tuned. Peace and love.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Get off the ship. Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
Good evening, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God I still got my hair! What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
But all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
She's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean... That says it all. Doc, you're my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Американская фирма Transceptor Technology приступила к производству компьютеров персональный спутник.
I've got the power! double on a heavenly level. Bang the bass, turn up the double. Radical mind, day and night all the time. 7-14, live the rhyme. Maniac, radiac, win of the game. I'm the lyrical Jesse James. Quality, I possess, don't say I'm fresh. When my voice goes through the mess, off the right, the phone that I can hold it. Copy written lyrical, they can't be told if they all snap. Don't need the police to try to save them. Your voice is sick, so speak. Stay on my back, or I will attack. And you don't want that.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. Give me the number for 911. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html on shazizradio.com. Where you have three chat rooms all in one. Anyway, we're talking about static electricity. Everybody and his brothers experience static electricity. There's a lot of experiments out there. If you rub a balloon on your hair, you can actually take that balloon and put it next to a stream of water and watch as the water bends towards it. So you got a force that's occurring there. You rub your feet on the carpet. Now keep in mind, tennis shoes or flip-flops or whatever it is that you got in between, there are two different materials have different triboelectric properties to them. And so certain things like maybe wool or cotton might be a little bit different, and plastics of all different types have different triboelectric effects, and some of them have static buildups better than others. Some of them reject static. But regardless, either way, those are all anomalies and points that could be used if you wanted to reject static on one side, and you could put a certain type of material. If you wanted to gather static on the opposite side, you could do that by another type of material. All of these ideas, you can actually see working prototypes out there. I'd like to gather up one of each and every one of these prototypes and show everybody these things actually in action. But either way, in the search for free energy, sometimes it's the most simple, that is the most obvious choice for what to try to do. We've been watching lightning zap around the sky for as long as recorded history. And that one bolt of lightning are thousands, if not millions, of volts of electricity. We know from our science and our experiments and electricity, electronics, whatever, that voltage is pressure. Pressure is how you get work done. And so with that said, how much work could you actually get done with one instantaneous bolt of lightning that literally has the power to start fires? It's so hot. Melt sand into glass. There's a deal out there they call a Folgerite, which is essentially lightning glass. When lightning hits a sandy spot, it superheats that sand into glass. And actually, those, if you can find them and keep them fully intact, then they're actually quite valuable as far as per ounce of what they're actually worth. So there are people that literally go out there and put lightning rods in the ground on beaches during storms so that they can try to get a lightning strike down there and get some lightning glass. There was actually a movie made where a guy did that. And it is real beautiful glass that was basically created by lightning. You know, most generally when you melt glass from a foundry or whatever and basically make glasses or windows or whatever, it's pretty cool, but when you got glass that was actually produced by lightning, you know, it kind of gives it that extra little pizzazz, so to speak. Kind of like if you found a diamond on the earth, that would be rare.
Thank you.
Raymond's phone. Mute your mic, please.
Sorry, I thought I did.
All right, so anyway, so if you got a diamond that you find on the earth, that might be rare. But imagine one flying in from space and you found it in a meteorite or something. Or an asteroid, I don't know. Now you got a diamond from space. How do you put a value on a diamond from space? It's pretty impressive.
I don't want anything out of an asteroid.
Oh, man.
We got enough of those. We got enough of those up in Capitol Hill.
That's some witty stuff there, Thomas.
Sweaty? What?
Witty, not sweaty. Somebody needs to get one of them doggone leaflets for Miracle Wear and ship one over to Thomas, so he can make a purchase. Buy him a.
No, man, things are much more humorous this way.
Mm. That's why Grandpa's always thinking everybody's saying something nasty because he can't hear very well. Anyway, he and the search.
It's funny you mention that because when I was a kid, my grandfather got old and got really hard of hearing. He could hear good, but he couldn't hear things that weren't clear. And anytime we wanted to talk about something and not have him hear it, we didn't say, well, you don't talk like that. And that way he couldn't understand what I was saying. It was cool. I was a kid. It was mean, but it was cool.
Yeah, taking advantage of poor Grandpa.
Really?
Anyway, so in the search for free energy, that's one of the sources out there readily available that I believe would be worthy of moving forward on. We know about solar, we know about wind, we know about hydroelectrics, thermoelectrics, and static electrics, and tons more. Taking this anomaly and putting it with that anomaly, could you actually make a solar panel that would use xenon or krypton gas, or any of the noble gases, maybe a combination of all the gases together, I don't know, somehow or another embedded into the solar panel so that whenever it's energized with static electricity, it actually produces a instantaneously transfer of energy to DC current. You see what I mean?
Where would you buy krypton gas?
Well, I don't know where you'd buy it, Matt. Maybe a welding shop would be able to tell you. I know I can get argon from a welding shop.
Oh, you can get all kinds of gas from a welding shop. You can get hydrogen, carbon dioxide, argon.
It's interesting to find out where to get xenon gas from, because it's kind of hard to get a hold of.
Well, I know that you can get spectrum tubes out there on eBay. They're anywhere from $12 and up per a piece.
Yeah, flash tubes, too.
Yeah.
They're just basically a tube with a couple of electrodes in them, and they've got gas inside. And there's, they can get xenon and krypton tubes, so. In fact, Radio Shack used to sell the little normal flashlight bulbs that had krypton gas in them.
Yeah.
The light was supposed to be better that came off the filament.
Well, that's why I was curious whether or not you could inject krypton gas into a solar panel to assist it in its transfer of energy, you know? So, if you could energize this with high voltage static electricity that would produce a white light, would it be enough to literally take that and transfer that static electricity into actual usable current on the solar panel?
Hey, think about this a minute. This is hypothetical. I have no idea what would happen, but you probably do. Remember that 8 million volt, no, it's 87 million volt taser I've got?
Yeah.
We put it in a jar and filled it with krypton gas and sealed it up and turned it on. What would happen?
Well, it'd probably glow for a long time.
87 million volts.
Question is, when it got into plasma state, it'd be really interesting to see whether or not it starts to eat into it.
Yeah.
Be a good experiment. They say that light is heat and heat is light, vice versa, so when you get into the white light spectrum, that should be some pretty intense heat.
Well, I've got several tasers. I've got some 4 million volt tasers and an 87 million volt taser. We need to do that. We need to get some glass pickle jars or something and figure out how to turn those things on and off remotely. Yeah. all we need is a krypton gas. Hey, is krypton gas heavier than air or not?
Not sure. I've got to look at the periodic table to find out.
It's pretty high on the periodic chart.
Which means it's light or heavy?
The higher it is, the more electrons, protons, and neutrons it has. So, but there's still gases, though, which is kind of odd. Even though they're butted right up against things that have just a few electrons less, and they're completely a solid or a metal.
I think to fill a jar wouldn't be hard to do. Just put two little holes in it with a piece of pipe with a valve.
Mm-hmm.
Put the if it's lighter than the air. Then you just turn the jar upside down, you run the lighter-than-air gas in the jar and very slowly, and it would go to the top, which would be at the bottom, because the bottom would be up, and it would slowly push the air out, and then you just close the valve on both of them, and you got it full. Now we got to figure out how to turn the taser on and off remotely, or put wire through the lid.
And put right. Simplest would probably be to run wire in there to move the switch outside the jar, but it would be possible to use like an Arduino or something like that, and a Bluetooth or a Wi-Fi module to go on it, so you could actually control it with a cell phone.
Bluetooth Wi-Fi goes through glass, so definitely would be possible.
I think you could modify a remote control, actually any TV remote control, and have the receiver diode inside there with a little circuit to turn it on and off.
Hello.
What do you think of that, Thomas?
It's doable.
So
those Arduinos are only like $2, $2 or $3 a piece too, though.
Well, that's cool.
So that means it'd be cheap enough that you burn them up. They're not wasting a bunch of money on it.
Yeah, and if my theory is correct, it probably will burn them up. But you could also build a mechanical version that basically use something like maybe a little mercury switch where all it had to be was tipped or rotated just slightly, and it'd make a connection.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a possibility there too. Turn it on its side, it'd be off. Turn it on, stand it up vertical, and it'd be on.
I don't know if I'd want to use mercury in a situation where you're going to have a gas hitting 3,000 degrees.
Well, it was just an idea, but it's actually...
Don't need vaporized mercury floating around in the air.
No, but if you've ever seen in some of the old cars, they had mercury switches in the trunk of the car that whenever it was like built in a little glass deal, and whenever you lifted the trunk, that mercury would roll down and turn the light on. Did you ever see those?
No, I've never seen that, but I know what you're talking about. They build them in thermostats.
Yeah.
That way, as the spring retracts, it tilts the little tube over, the bubble over, and the mercury makes the contact to turn the AC or the heater on and off.
So essentially there's something out there somewhere that they're in their own containers, so it'd be separated from the plasma.
Yeah, I still ain't trusting that after you burned a hole through that glass like you did.
Yeah, you don't want mercury vapor floating around, that's for sure. But anyway, there's a path to go. There's a direction. What do you guys think? Does it sound like a good plan of action?
Yes, it does.
I like the rolling billboard idea because I want to get more people excited in the mad science so that they'll be thinking and coming across the ideas. You know, while I'm looking at the podcast page over there, I see all these different little designs and ideas, Slayer Exciter circuits, and different deals for heat transfer, and high voltage, and so on and so forth. And I think you're only limited by your imagination when it comes to where you send this energy. All the copper wire is in any electric motor or generator is railroad tracks. That's it. It's plain and simple.
And that's exactly what I've been trying to say about the conductor that we're talking about adding into the plastic.
Yeah.
It's nothing more than the railroad tracks to let the electrons that build up from the triboelectric effect have a direction to go, so they don't build up until you get that high voltage. Instead, you just get whatever voltage that is necessary to push its way through what's connected to the end of those conductive paths.
Yep.
So it's literally a battery that adjusts its voltage based on its need.
Well, if you go over there to the shazizradio.com and click on the Mad Science Podcast page, and you go down, look at all the different pictures, you'll find one little GIF animation of a car that I designed a long time ago with what I call the electric pulse engine. And essentially it uses magnetron technology, magneto or what magnetron, whichever is in the lawnmower motor, that when the flywheel spins around, it pulses a coil, which in turn shoots a high voltage charge down to a solenoid or a electric motor, which in turn each one of these turns a cam, part of the camshaft. And so it's possible to build an electric motor that has mechanical energy as opposed to electrical, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Combine the two together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that one right there would be cool to replicate, but the one that we were talking about where we're actually building a static electric motor that would rival the internal combustion engine, I still fully believe is possible. That deal where I talked about the styrofoam wrapped in aluminum tape and the attraction that it actually has like a magnet to that top load of that Van de Graaff generator. That's a force with two different types of materials combined in together, one being conductive and the other being, because of the tribal electric qualities of it, was attracted to that static charge building up on that Van de Graaff generator. So, we got the materials, we got the knowledge on how, if you know that something attracts, you know it's got a force in one direction. If you know it repels, you know it's got a force in the opposite direction. The Franklin Bell is a simple concept of having a pendulum with a ball on the end of it, aluminum ball that one plate on the other side is positively charged and the other one's negatively charged. When it gets to one side, it picks up that charge and then it's repelled and sends back over and discharges on the opposite side. That has a pendulum effect. There's a mechanical force being produced in there by that ball going back and forth. And that mechanical force, even if it's not as strong as you would think, if you actually look at an internal combustion engine, each one of those cylinders are producing power, but not one of them by themselves is going to be able to move that car without the assistance of the other one. One piston goes up, it turns the camshaft. It goes down, it pulls the camshaft back in line for the next one to do what it needs to do. Goes up, goes down, and it works in a sequence all the way down along the deal, and all that combined force and torque together is actually what pushes your car down the road. So with a static attraction, you could do the exact same thing, even though one by itself wouldn't have enough. It's the combination of all of them working in conjunction with each other. That pendulum effect going back and forth, turning a little gear like in a watch. When you got a watch, there's not a lot of torque going on inside a watch. You know, even the old wind-up watches or battery-operated electrical motor watches, there's not a lot of torque going in there, but it's enough to turn this gear, which turns that gear, which in turn finally pushes that arm and tells you what time it is. So, you could build, using the old Franklin Bell kind of deal with the pendulum effect, use that pendulum going back and forth to actually get mechanical work done. One by itself ain't going to have enough force to do what you need, but if modified and engineered properly, you could have, let's say, instead of a V8, you got a V12 that when that effect is going, when that static discharge is pushing it back and forth, that each one of those is adding to the force that finally actually pushes you down the road in the car. That's just one little basic idea, but I believe there's a lot more powerful methods to do it. Combining the turbine with the static corona motors, the static electric motors, that you can actually get. Yeah.
I'm looking at something here. It says DC 3.6 volts in to 1,000 kV out. 1,000 times 1,000 is 1,000,000. That's 1,000,000 volts with 3.6 volts input.
Well, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get some of them.
Now, for those of you that have been listening for a long time to what I've been talking about on the Mad Science and on my YouTube channel, I always stayed in a range of 12 volts. I'm always interested in 12 volts because anybody and his brother, if they got a car battery, has access to 12 volts. And if you can take that 12 volts and you can use that 12 volts to ramp it up to 20,000 volts like I'm doing with a Beckett oil burner igniter, energize that gas into a plasma state, now you've got a heating system that running off of 12 volts with very, very small amount of amperage draw on that battery. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so I try to keep things down to the lower voltages because it's easy to come up with 12 volts of DC. And something like that, you could use solar panels, wind generators, or hydroelectric, or whatever. If you notice all the water wheels and stuff they do out there, anywhere from 12 to 24 to 48 volt systems. It's down there in the low range. Right now, we're sending like 7,000 volts of AC current down a power line, stepping it down. By the time it gets down, they've already lost energy on the way there. And you start using it, you're wasting energy for every transformer you got in your house. And so if you could design this energy system to be smart, if it only takes 9 volts AC to run your clock, why are you using 120 volts AC to run your clock? See what I mean?
Yep.
Well, that's the key. And that's what we're working on. So, looks like we're down to it, man. Which is good, because I've been suffering from the flu for the last couple days. And I'm about dead, dude. Alright. So, you guys got any last thoughts?
I don't know, hang on.
Raymond's distracted. What about you, Thomas? Did we beat the dead horse enough?
Okay, how about what we were talking about before we went on the air at 8 o'clock? This trivia has nothing to do with what we've been talking about on the radio show, but it's something that a lot of people don't know the answer to, and it's physical physics, and that is a cable clamp. Everybody, a lot of people don't know, but they guess. Where do you put a cable clamp has a U-shaped deal that goes into another part called saddle. It's a cinch in the saddle, right?
Yeah.
And everybody wants to know, which one do you put on the live line cable, and when you wrap the cable around and the dead end, which one do you put on the dead end, which one do you put the live end on? Okay? The thing is, the rule of thumb is a good cowboy never puts a saddle on a dead horse.
Yeah, you're really not going to get very far with that, are you?
Yeah. Anyway, the saddle goes on your live pulling line, and when you wrap the line around something, come back, put it in your cable clamp, you put the cinch on the dead end and the saddle on the live end. I'm sorry, the saddle goes on the dead end because it goes on the live end because the cowboy never puts a saddle on a dead horse. There you go.
Somebody needs to find out if spider wire is conductive or not. Spider wire is fishing line.
Oh, okay.
And you put this on your fishing reel, and you ain't gonna lose a fish. I literally pulled in a log on my fishing reel, and I didn't break the line. And you can't break this line with your hand. It's like the thickness of this wire, this line is thinner than if you got, like, let's say 50 pound test line, fishing line that is in the filament kind of range or whatever. The plastic stuff or whatever, it's a lot thicker. But the spider wire is like a fraction of the thickness and holds more of the weight. So when we were talking about whether or not you could actually modify these cable connectors for power, like towers and stuff like that, if this spider wire isn't conductive, then you could use that as an insulator between two sections of cable and use those clamps that you were talking about to literally lock them together and build a spark gap in between that cable, where the cable was still as strong as it was with the metal, but you had that spark gap that you could actually gather that energy out of the air. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Right now, the energy that's gathered goes straight down that wire right into the ground. So you could go up there and grab a hold of that cable and you're not going to get shocked. But if you put a split in that line and you had one hand on one of them and one hand on the other, you'd find out what the atmospheric group found out when they got the wires up in the air. The higher you get off the ground, the higher the voltage goes. And so if that tower is 200 and some odd foot tall, then you're liable to track down a lightning bolt. What do you think?
Yep, I like it.
Well, that spider wire is fishing line, like I said, but I have never tested to see if it was conductive, whether you could run electricity across it or not. And if it isn't conductive, you know that one strand of it will hold 50 pounds. So if you make a cable connector that had multiple braided strands of spider wire, the thickness of that other cable, or even potentially a little bit thicker depending on how much weight that per strand combined to actually match the strength of that steel. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
If you could do that, you could make a spark gap on any radio tower that would pull static electricity right out of the air of an existing tower that's already there. And from that, you could pull voltage down off of it. The infrastructure's already there, folks. All right, that's pretty much it, unless you guys got anything else. No? Yeah? No? All right. They're distracted. Well, folks, you've been listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. We're trying to move forward, so if you got any way you want to help us out, like try to pass on the links to the podcast and share this information with people, and we'll get more people interested to the table and more alternative brilliant researchers together to actually get things accomplished. Looking into static electricity because it's one of the most prevalent energy sources out there that's clean, renewable, and isn't that what they wanted? Clean, renewable, alternative energy?
Yep.
They were looking right at it. Solar power, wind power, hydroelectrics, thermal electrics, static electrics, and I could go on and on and on. Technologies that's been around since maybe even prior to the 1700s, 1800s, and 1900s and to the present. So, there we go. We got all the pieces of the puzzle if you're willing to help us put it together. Peace and love, everybody. Take care. You've been listening to Mad Science.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.